Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. Thank you for tuning in and being with me on this 27th day of February 2021. And we're going to look at the word normal. Some people use me as a soothsayer. They want to know what I think will happen, like I would know, like I'm some sort of a soothsayer, and I'm not. I'm just a guy doing his practice and sharing with you this beautiful experience of awakening, and it is truly an honor and a privilege to be able to do that. But let's take a look at the word normal. Conforming to a standard, the usual, the typical, the expected, according to the dictionary. And I think that is something that most of us are looking for, the norm, get our life back to the way it was. But something this pandemic offered to us is a chance for all of us to have a little bit maybe of some self-examination, to be able to see who and what we have become and what our life is all about and what we are as human beings, maybe change the way we operate a little bit and change the way we live in that operation. For instance, I think one of the things we learned most is we can't live with ourselves. We have to always be in contact with someone. We're easily made lonely and feel forlorn about our loneliness, etc., etc. So we kind of stay in that and we don't really mature out of that. We need constant input, constant. So we've learned that it is hard for most Americans to be alone. The other thing we've looked at and can see is that in being alone, a lot of our mental illness comes up. We have a lot of mental illness in this country. There are a lot of suicides, but not that depicts a mental illness. We all commit suicide one way or another as we grow older and everything, the way we live, our habits that are unhealthy. So we do have all of that going on too. But the people that directly ended their life, tragedy, we see it, and it's especially with young people. So there are a lot of things we've learned that our society can't cope with. And what I found, frankly, is that our society can't cope with society. It can't cope with itself. And then came all of this racial tension and craziness. We're still locked into the idea of color and skin and all of that other stuff. And do you really want to go back to normal? Do you want to go back to that, the way it was? I don't know. It depends what you call normal, huh? I don't know. Anyway, I know for myself, but I don't know for you. And I got a lot of email about this. Emails where right in the middle of it, it will say something like, when will we get back to normal, or can we get back to normal? So here are some questions. First one comes from Jerry in Las Vegas, Nevada. You say that we can't or won't get back to normal. Why, Jerry? And then he goes into how disappointing that is to hear, yada, yada, yada. Jerry, everything is in a flux. Life is progressive. It's always moving towards source. It's always moving in a constant towards whatever is the totality of that constant. It is always moving towards the river that is going to pour into the ocean of existence. It's constantly doing that. So to take it away from that poetic stuff that I just kind of gave you, we live in impermanence. Everything is moving in impermanence and operates in impermanence. What rises in this world falls in this world. What has established itself changes constantly. You can see this in almost everything that you look at in this world, including your body, your friendships, your society, your government, your world. Everything is in a constant flux. And that's the way life is. Now, to try to bring it back to the way you and I liked it, in the comfort of something that we thought was very important or very comfortable, something like that, that's another story altogether. And most of us just simply don't get it. We don't understand why life changes. It changes because that is the nature of life, to live in impermanence. Nothing stays the same. And we'd like to think that the things that change, change for the better. But that's not always true, not at all. So we can't say that. Things change the way the atmosphere, the tone, the texture of the race consciousness that we live in. We live in the collective unconscious, and it is always being added and deleted. People come, people go, people die, people are born. It is always thriving, constantly maneuvering and making itself whatever it is. And whatever it is, it morphs us, because basically we are subject to the whims of the collective unconscious, because our minds are hooked into it, our bodies are hooked into it. The nature of our body is to be social. The nature of our mind is to be social. The nature of our emotions is to be social. Everything has to do with the touch of feeling emotionality, the touch of feeling the current, whatever it is that would make a person feel happy. I mean, look at the infractions that are placed upon us in society constantly, the constant change of mores, the constant change of beliefs, the constant change of ideals, whatever we even think of as good. So it's always in a flux. Things are always changing. And some of us drag our feet, you know, and we don't want to go into it. And we shouldn't, because there are things about the new world, the new life that people are living, that for our purposes, are who we are and what we are, is not really healthy for us. So we continue on in this, and we're not interested in anything but the change that we think makes us more comfortable, makes us happier, gives us some sense of more emotional gratification. This pandemic has done some wonderful things for a lot of us, and some terrible things for a lot of us. It looks terrible. For those of us who don't want to change, for those of us who just want to live as we've always lived and go back to that kind of myopic way of looking at life and being like a robot, mechanical, and just going through the days to get through the days and doing the things we have to do to get through what we have to do, things like that. For those of us who live like that and like that, it's going to be hard to get back to that. There's going to be a quasi new norm. And we're going to have to really, if you really want to know, we're going to have to change and mature, and we're going to have to care about one another, and we're going to have to try to help one another more. But that isn't really going to happen, because we don't live in that kind of society, and we don't live by that principle that breaks the chain of our DNA and our genetics. We live in the maturation of fear and hate, and how that blends with our mind and our body, and how we live in order to avoid any kind of fear or the wrath of anyone's hate and things like that. We have an odd way of living. We don't live in the evolution of love. We live in the de-evolution of our primal nature, our ego, our vanity, the emperor of all malice. We get involved in a lot of that. So competition is also a big one in that. Are we ever going to get back to normal? I hope not. I really do. I hope not. Normal for us is to be mean and cruel and to be self-righteous. I hope that this caused us to pause and maybe build a different kind of world, a different kind of society. Maybe find a few of us that are willing to change the way we live, change the way we operate, change everything about us. Maybe it's all about that. And as we change, as we mature, as we grow beyond our emotionality, and that's the only true maturity there can be, we come to a place where we operate differently. We are no longer slaves to our desires, our ambition, our pride, our hate. That could happen. Is it likely? No. No, 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 no. We need a new norm, and that isn't really going to happen. What you're going to see is a fractured norm. We're going to find people who are going to be fractured by their past and try to bring a little bit of their past in, a little bit of what's happening now in, and hope for a better future. And it's going to bring about a lot of confusion, and it's going to make for a lot of disarray in society. And we're losing our culture. We have lost the beauty of insight, of tolerance, of compassion. We just don't have it anymore. Of basic, well, not that we ever had a lot of it, but a little bit of forgiveness. We just didn't have that. We're not into that. We're into vengeance and pride and what we think of as justice in the American way, which is nothing more than legalized vengeance. So that's why, if you're asking me, Jerry, what you did, your email was very interesting to me, how you interpret the things I say. That's got to change, too, with people, and that's not going to change. People don't change the way they think. They refuse that. They think their thinking is their thinking, and it doesn't need changing. But I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt, it needs some changing, and it isn't going to happen. We have to shift from being a slave to our mind to that of being awakened by our heart. And that's a hard one for people to get. That's really, really, really difficult for people to get. I hope that helps you, Jerry, and I hope it explains my position. And please forgive me. I hope you will. Namaste. Next one comes from John. And he does not tell me where he lives. What can I do to help live beyond the physical? Meditation is very difficult for me. I have the same thoughts over and over again. Can they be overcome? John. Let's talk about thoughts and overcoming the physical, as you put it here. We talk a lot to our minds. If you look at the way you think and how you think and where you think from, that's a very important point. Where do I think from? What is the origins, the genesis of my thinking? Where do I think from? Where do you think from? Where do your thoughts come from? Well, if you really look at it and you try to get a little bit involved in it, you'll see that most of us have thoughts that are based in what we think of as our acuity, our mental acuity. This acuity is a combination of our DNA and our genetic nature, and you put them together, you combine them, and you have a basic acuity of people. And in that acuity, in that thinking, you derive some sense of thoughts, of what you're comfortable with, your ability to reason and logic things out and see them in accord with your family, your genetic family, I should say, as well as your probably your earthly family now. And you can see it all if you're going into third person. So you have to be able to recognize where your thoughts originate. And just to give a quick synopsis of it, it usually comes from the fear of survival, the fear that we won't survive socially, physically, we won't survive this world, blah, blah. It's in the difficulty of surviving. And survival is a huge issue in people, absolutely huge. So when you look at your life a little bit and you look at what your life is all about, and you look at your thoughts and where they emulate from and where they come, not only emulate from, but how they are developed and how they come into fruition in your thinking as legitimate thoughts, thoughts that you want to take action on or thoughts that you mull around in your mind, you start to realize, where did all this come from? It came from your emotionality, the fear of not surviving. And that's the huge one. So if you want to really work on your thoughts, you can't change them. You have to learn how to, I want to say this word, desensitize yourself from your thoughts. Remove yourself ever so slightly. In other words, not every thought that John has or Greg has are thoughts that warrant thinking, warrant attention, warrant worry, or warrant the idea of legitimacy, and especially the ones that are cruel and unkind, the ones that are not of love. And thoughts can't emulate love. They can't think love. They can only think what they think. It's the nature of thoughts to be predatory. And you must remember that. Most of our thoughts are predatory. We're looking for ways to survive. So with that all being said, if you can watch your thoughts and the quality of them and just allow them to rise and then fall. Meditation in the beginning stages, is just to sit with your thoughts, John. Just sit and see your thoughts rise and fall. See where they come from. They begin here, they rise up to here, and then they fall into something else, and then another thought the same way, over and over and over again. The object of the game, if you really want to make headway, is not to talk to your thoughts, not to talk to your mind, not to evaluate your thinking, to be, as the Buddha and Jesus would say, non-judgmental about your thinking. Just watch. Then observe which thoughts you think of as being all important. And if you could jot them down in a little journal while you're doing this little exercise, you might learn something about your intuition and the lack thereof, or you might learn something about your genetic nature and how predominant it is and what your human nature is doing. It's trying to survive. It's trying to say to you, look out here, look out there. Oh, about this. Oh, about that. Oh, this would be good. Oh, that wouldn't be so good. Just watch the quality of your thoughts, but do not engage them. If you think about a thought, you've engaged. You have to learn how to observe a thought without engaging it. So I sit and I observe and watch. I cling to nothing. I don't cling to this thought or that thought. I just observe. Now, if you can do that, which I don't know if you can, but it is possible, then you will start to understand how to get beyond your body, how to get beyond your mind. It's a very simple little thing I've given you there. Not very difficult to talk about, but often a skill that needs to be adhered to. You got to develop this skill. You've got to kind of make it your own, if you know what I mean. Hope that helps you. Please forgive me. Namaste. Last question. This comes from Riley. How do I love what I hate? And Riley doesn't tell me where he lives. How do you love what you hate? By seeing it in the context of yourself. What good does it do me to hate whatever it is that I hate? How is that helping me? What is it doing to my life? How am I maturing? Look at what you hate in context to, is this helping me awaken? Is this helping me to come to another place in this lifetime? Maybe a better, more loving, more kind place. Look at what you hate and see it in the context of love. Put yourself in a position where you are no longer thinking about love, but you find love within you beyond your emotions. Love lives deep within your beingness. Most people do not find their beingness. They just never find it. They never find that state and that place within them where they simply exist as love. If you get really quiet, you will find it. It is that place between one thought and another. It is the gap, as I call it. And if you just sit in that, wanting nothing with all of your heart, just watching, you will find, you will get it. It will come to you. Beauty will come to you. You will start to realize how magnificent all of this is. But it takes real effort. And I'll tell you what you're up against, Riley. It's really easy. You're up against the chemicals in your body, in your brain, the endorphins, testosterone, you know, all that stuff that we have inside our bodies that make it our oxytocin, and all of it, it just is rambling around in there, causing us to send the neurons off in certain patterns, and then we start thinking in those patterns, and we start thinking that is our thoughts, and those are our final conclusions. So let me just say this to you. Never come to a final conclusion about any thought. Don't look at a thought and think to yourself, that is the thought. That is the way I should think. That is what blah, 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 blah. Don't do that. It hurts when I do that. Don't do that. Just watch. Learn how to observe. Meditation is watching. It is observing. In that observation, there is transcendence. And you will find yourself starting to really be aware that those thoughts that you might have nothing to do with the reality that you might be facing in your life currently. And you can look at things from an entirely different point of view. Now, if you're willing to do that, something beautiful from the other shore will reach you. There are other experiences deep within us that we have access to, but we are not privy to because our thoughts interrupt that process. When I am no longer interested in my own thoughts and what evaluations I've come to, that is when something really interesting begins to happen. It's called consciousness. I hope that helped you, Riley. I really do. Great questions today from people. I want to thank you. If you ever have a question, you can email me at greg at aspire.org. That's Greg at aspire.org. Have a beautiful one. I'll be back on the air tomorrow. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.